This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, a show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, joy, joy.
Hello and welcome to Well, 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 the show brought to you live every Tuesday from midday by the Victorian AIDS Council. I'm Adam and my co-host today is the fabulous and effervescent Texas. Hi, Tex. How are you going?
Hi there, Adam. Thank you. Lovely as always to hear your dulcet tones. It's a very grey day in Melbourne, but I'm sure your dulcet tones are going to raise the temperature and have everybody nice and warm inside.
Exactly. But before we kick off, thanks to Gazman for the morning show and thanks to Gazman for the news. Gazman all round, really. I mean, he's just superstar, superstar.
Yeah.
So for anyone that's just tuned in to Joy 94.9, what is Well, Well, Well all about, Texas?
Well, 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 here at Well, 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 we talk about topics that relate to the GLBTI community. We're all about sex, health and well-being. But Adam, I'm sure that I, like the listener, is on the edge of a seat wanting to know what's on today's show.
You physically are on the edge of a seat.
I am, yep. Right, bottom.
Well, okay, well, on today's show, we'll actually be speaking with Associate Professor Martin Holt from the Centre for Social Research in Health about the Melbourne Gay Community Periodic Survey, which we all fill out at midsummer, mainly harassed by your volunteers, Tex, who are very diligent.
Very, very diligent.
Very, very diligent.
Great men and women.
So anyone with a clipboard at midsummer, basically, that's who we're talking about. So we're actually going to talk about those results and just get a little bit of an overview of what gay and bisexual men are up to in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also actually be talking about a new study that's looking at the benefits of starting treatment earlier for people who are recently diagnosed HIV positive. It's one of the first of its kind, so it's going to be very, very interesting to see what that's all about.
It is very interesting. And look, if dear listener, if you'd like to get in contact with us today, you want to get involved in the conversation, feel free to ask questions. There are a plethora of ways to do so.
Plethora. And what are those plethora of ways, Tex?
Well, the best way to get in contact with us is to email us on air at joy.org.au, or you could send an SMS or a text to Tex 0427 Joy 949. And look, both of those, both the emails and the SMSs, they come to us right here in the studio. Or you can get a message to us via Facebook now or at any time going to facebook.com/wellwellwelljoy. Or finally, you can call into the studio 1300 Joy 949.
So many ways, and we do love to hear from our listeners. So if you're sitting at home and you've got your cup of tea and you're sitting on the couch and you're listening to our dulcet tones, to quote-unquote you, send a message, send an email, ask us a question, and we'd be happy to oblige. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. We are joined now by Associate Professor Martin Holt from the Centre for Social Research in Health. So welcome, Martin, and thanks for being on the show.
No worries. It's good to be here.
Fantastic. Well, before we get into the studies that we've brought you in to discuss today, can you tell the listener a little bit about yourself and what you do work-wise?
Of course. So I'm a researcher based at the University of New South Wales. I'm a social scientist by training, and my day job, I lead a range of research projects related to primarily to gay and bisexual men and HIV prevention. And what that means is I sort of look at, from a social and behavioural research perspective, what keeps people safe, what puts them in harm's way, and how they understand and practice HIV prevention.
Oh, good day, Martin. It's Tex here.
Oh, hi, Tex.
Now, Martin, just to let the listener know, how long have you been involved in research?
Oh, going back in the mists of time. So I started training in research in earnest in 1997 when I started my PhD. I have finished my PhD. And and I've been working in HIV since 2003.
And so how did you actually get involved in research? What made you want to do your PhD? Was there something that you were passionate about, or you just thought, hey, academics, maths, I really like it, let's go, let's write?
Well, I was lucky, I guess, in that I... after my undergraduate degree, which was in psychology, I didn't want to study anymore at the time. So I worked for a few years in a few different things, and I couldn't really find my groove. So I kept thinking about going back to do further study, like lots of people do. And I was lucky enough to get a scholarship to do a master's at the London School of Economics, which is a lovely school. And that really fired my passion to do further research and go on and do a PhD. And I focused my PhD on something that was kind of close to my heart, which was sort of young people, sexuality, going out, and identity. It was so that was in there.
And so how long have you been with the Centre for Social Research?
Since 2003. I actually started as a casual research assistant, paid by the hour.
And so how did it transpire that you came across to Australia and sort of got involved with them?
Yeah, so after my PhD, I applied for some funding to do a two-year postdoc, and that was based at the University of Western Sydney. So that got me to Australia, and then I kind of cobbled it together after that. I actually didn't work in HIV at all, but I was introduced to some people who worked here, and I really loved I loved the sort of combination of doing theoretically informed research, but also something that was very applied and was used by people in the community sector and in government and in clinical work. And that sort of, very applied focused was sort of what fired my enthusiasm.
Okay, now, Martin, we're going to, after we hear some music and stuff, we're going to look into the Melbourne Gay Community Periodic Survey, and indeed the periodic surveys that happen all around the country, and also COUNT, which you'll be able to explain to us. But what other studies do you get involved with? Is it just HIV that you focus on?
It's mainly HIV. I have done work before on illicit drug use as well, but at the moment I largely focus on HIV. And the other main area of work I look at the moment is the introduction of alternative prevention methods for HIV, like pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP for short, and the use of HIV treatment for prevention. So I run a project where we look at gay and bisexual men's changing attitudes to their understanding of those new technologies, how they feel about them, whether they trust them, and whether they'd like to use them. So that's kind of another main area of work that I'm involved in.
And so are you interested in that just because it's new prevention technology that's out there at the moment and you sort of want to get into the ground level and understand the nitty-gritty bits of it? Or is it just something that, because everyone's discussing it, it needs to be researched and you want to do it well?
Well, both are true. I mean, obviously, it's kind of a sexy topic at the moment because things are changing very rapidly and researchers are often scrambling over each other to be first doing something. And, me and my colleagues in this work, have been amongst the first to sort of research that in Australia. So, big ups to us. But the other thing is obviously that the history of HIV and changes in prevention over the last 30 years have shown that gay men in particular tend to be early adopters with new technologies, but they also tend to use them in ways that people don't quite expect. So one of the challenges is to understand how gay men are engaging with new science around HIV, but also the unintended consequences of their engagement. So they might come up with some new fantastic ways of protecting themselves and their partners, but we also are trying to get in there and work out whether people misunderstand the science or whether they're perhaps using things in ways that may not actually protect them that well. And then we engage with community organisations in particular to then say, right, we've got some challenges here. We need to actually talk to gay and bisexual men about what's going on so that they have better outcomes, not worse ones.
Absolutely.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and we have had a message that's come in. And the message reads, I've decided to have a break from a very busy schedule watching amazingly boring movies to tune in and listen to our dulcet voices. Resting and recovering from surgery with his feet up, always to good to hear from Martin. Very entertaining and informative show. Lexi is loving it as well. Lexi's a dog. This message is long, and if you read it slow, it'll cover 1.5 minutes. Hugs and kisses. Time for my pain relief medication. And that's from our colleague and co-host, Carlos, who's off getting better after surgery. So, chukas to you, Carlos.
So, Martin, I guess the reason that we brought you in is to talk about the two studies today, and the first one being the Gay Community Periodic Survey. So can you explain exactly what it is and how it's run and what the aim of it is?
Of course, yeah. So the Gay Community Periodic Surveys are community-based surveys of gay and bisexual men run in the large cities across Australia. In Melbourne, it's conducted annually during midsummer, during the festival, to maximise participation. And VAC, and Tex knows about this intimately, leads recruitment in the gay venues and events. So what we do is Tex or somebody else, equally qualified, corrals a team of peers to go out to gay bars, other venues and festival events, and we approach men and we ask them to fill in a questionnaire about their sex lives, relationships, HIV testing, sexual health and drug use. They can fill in the questionnaire anonymously, and we use the results to inform HIV and sexual health programs.
Now, Martin, look, I actually know the answer to the question, but I'll ask it because the listener doesn't. How long has the survey been running?
So it's been running since 1998. In Melbourne. Mm-hmm. Melbourne was one of the first places that the surveys were conducted. I think Sydney started a couple of years earlier. And we've run it every year since then with, you know, VAC support and funding from the Victorian Health Department. And most of the states and territories, we run it, the bigger cities, we run it every year, and the smaller cities, we run it every couple of years.
So does that mean that it's run in every state and territory, or are there certain places that you just go, there's no way to sort of access the population that we would need to access?
Yeah, so it's been largely in six states and territories, and the two admissions where it's harder to recruit guys by going out and about. The two admissions are the Northern Territory and up until recently Tasmania, but now we have, in the last few years, added online recruitment. You know, we finally recognised the fact that perhaps we needed an online element to how we approach people. With the addition of online recruitment, we could extend to Tasmania. So we've got a small little survey that runs there once every couple of years, I think, is our intention. Now, the territory, Northern Territory, it's harder. It's, you know, it's a big area and the population of gay and bisexual men is relatively small, so we sort of include them in our online recruitment, and I think in a few years we'll see how many men we've got there. Melbourne is much, much easier because there's a lot of venues, a lot of activity, and it's very, very efficient to go out, out and about and approach people.
And Martin, how many people were recruited in Melbourne this year in the 2015 survey?
So the 2015 survey in Melbourne, we recruited over 3,000 men. So a bumper crop, and that's actually quite a large proportion of how many we get nationally. So nationally, we get up to about 8,000 men. Melbourne and Sydney are the two big surveys. So Melbourne goes first during midsummer, and then we do recruitment in Sydney during Mardi Gras, which is sort of like the following month.
And so who are these people? So who is the sample? And I guess that's the technical term for it. So yeah. What, do they live everywhere? What do they do? What are their ages? You know, all these different types of things. We've got 3,000 guys who have filled out this survey. Who are they?
Yeah. So look, the survey is very deliberately focused on men, gay and bisexual men who are socially and sexually engaged with each other. And what I mean by that is they're out and about, they're going to venues, they're hanging out with other men, they're probably also, you know, having a reasonable amount of sex as well, because we recruit men from sex venues and other places. The sample is very gay identified. It's branded as the Gay Community Periodic Survey, so over 9 out of 10 of the men identify as gay. Over half of them are Australian born. I mean, that sort of tends to go out without saying. In Australian cities, like about half or more are born in Australia and the rest from overseas. They're very well educated because it's a metropolitan sample, and most of them have some kind of paid employment. So it's very much a metropolitan sort of gay community focused sample, and there is a rationale for that. So it's not just because that's easy or we like hanging out with glossy gay men. It's also because we found from over the years that these men who are socially and sexually engaged with each other are generally at the highest risk of HIV, not exclusively, but they're generally at higher risk of HIV than other men, so men who live in the regions or younger guys who are still living at home and so on. So we get men in that busy phase of their lives, and that is useful for our partners in health promotion and HIV because, you know, we're tracking what the community at risk and the community who are doing most to try and prevent HIV transmission, we're tracking practices in that group.
Fantastic. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Did you know Joy Audio Production Services can help you with your audio recording needs? No matter what the task at hand, we have a way to support you and your business. We can produce radio-style interviews for your website, on-hold greetings, podcasts, voiceovers for video, and more. Call Joy's production manager, Jason, on 1300 569 949, or email production@joy.org.au. That's 1300 569 949. Joy Audio Production Services, commercial grade audio quality at community radio rates.
And this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. And joining us now is Associate Professor Martin Holt. So, Martin, we were talking about the community periodic survey, and we've got 3,000 guys. So what are some of the results?
Yeah, okay. So I'll take you through some of the key areas that we ask about. Now, we have quite a lot of focus on HIV testing in the survey. That's kind of a marker of whether guys are going to see their doctor or going to a sexual health clinic. And we find in the surveys that nearly 9 out of 10 men say they've had an HIV test at some point in their life, and that's not really much of a surprise. Gay men are pretty likely to get tested for HIV. But we pay a lot of attention to whether men say they've been recently tested, because that's a marker of whether they're going back to get to update their status if they're HIV negative. And we find that about 3/4 of men in Melbourne say they've had a test in the previous year, which is pretty high, and that has gone up a little bit over time. So that's sort of one of the key areas. We also include HIV-positive men in the survey, and we ask them about their engagement in care and HIV treatment. And we've seen in the Melbourne survey, like some of the other cities as well, that treatment uptake among positive men has been increasing over time, and over 90% of the men in the periodic survey say they're in Melbourne say they're currently receiving antiretroviral treatment, and we think that's probably in recognition of the fact that treatments are easier to take than they used to be and they're more effective. So we're gradually seeing and restrictions on prescribing have been removed, so we're gradually seeing more guys opting with their clinician to go on treatment. Now, some of the other areas of the survey, a lot of the rest of the survey is focused about sex and relationships. And so we asked men in if they've got a regular partner at the time of the survey, whether they've had discussions about casual sex, about and also the sex they have in the relationship. And one of the things that's kind of intriguing is that about only about half the men with a regular partner, with a boyfriend or a long-term partner, say they've made an explicit agreement about casual sex. They've actually talked about it and decided what is acceptable. And about half the guys haven't discussed the issue, which is not a particularly sound basis, you know, for protecting each other, particularly if you have sex outside the relationship, which many gay men do. Now, in some of the more thorny areas, we ask about condom use and safe sex with boyfriends, and then also with casual partners, men outside the relationship. And what we see is that, in general, sex without condoms has become a little more common over time, both for men in relationships and for men having casual sex. So men tend to be more likely to have sex without condoms if they're in a relationship, and over half men in relationships say they don't always use condoms for anal sex. And it's a smaller group who say they don't use condoms with casual partners, and that's about 1/3 of men in the Melbourne survey. And we do pay a lot of attention to that, because especially when men are having sex without condoms with casual partners, that's a, we know that that's a particular risk for HIV transmission. So we, you know, we get concerned if that changes too quickly. That said, we also ask men what they do to try and reduce transmission risk, particularly, so not only condoms, which obviously is sort of like the linchpin of prevention and has been for many decades, but we also ask men what else they do to reduce transmission, particularly if they're having sex without condoms. And what we're seeing at the moment is that positive HIV positive and HIV negative men use somewhat different strategies to reduce transmission risk. So as I mentioned, most of the positive men we survey say they're currently on treatment, and what we find is that positive men are increasingly focused on having an undetectable viral load, which is a marker of treatment efficacy, that the virus is fully suppressed. And we find that positive men who have sex without condoms report that they tend to rely on that strategy, that they know they have an undetectable viral load, so then they only have sex without condoms when they know they're undetectable.
And so when you say the virus is suppressed, just for a listener out there who might not be familiar with the term viral load or viral suppression, what does that actually mean?
So basically, if you're HIV positive and you're taking antiretroviral treatment for in a consistent way, what that basically does is it suppresses the ability of the virus to replicate in the body. And so over time, your viral load, the amount of free virus in your body, drops to a level where the testing that they use, the blood test they use to try and measure how much free virus you have in your body, it drops down to an undetectable level. And then other research that's been done internationally suggests that if you sustain an undetectable viral load, that your chance of sexually transmitting HIV drops massively, almost to zero. So so it's both a marker of whether your treatment is working successfully in suppressing your virus, and that is good for you because it means that the virus is much less likely to damage your body. But it's also good for your sexual partners because it means it's much more difficult for you to transmit the virus.
Yeah. And so this is different to obviously a strategy that negative men would use. So what are some of the common strategies that HIV negative guys use?
Yeah, so negative men aren't so focused, and negative men in general tend to have sex, or so they believe, with each other, and then there's a small group of negative men who might have sex with positive guys who they know. But in general, negative men tend to be much more focused on what we call serosorting, and that's trying to find other men who they believe are HIV negative to have sex without condoms. So that used to be much more common in relationships. So if you're in a relationship and you both got tested and you both knew you were HIV negative, you might agree not to use condoms with each other, knowing that you've got the same HIV status. But what we've seen over time is that some guys are more comfortable doing that with partners they don't know as well. And so what we see in the Melbourne data is that negative men who don't have sex who don't always have sex with condoms are more likely to report that strategy, trying to match HIV status or serosort before sex without condoms. Now, and this is a tricky one because obviously if you get it right, if you're both HIV negative, there's no risk of transmission. However, the problem is if you or your partner believes they're HIV negative, but actually, unbeknownst to you, you've become infected, then of course there may be a high risk of transmission there. If you think you're negative, but you're having sex, but actually, you know, you or your partner has become infected.
Now, Martin, the survey also asked men where they meet. Now, I remember in the distant past, people actually used to meet face-to-face. They had to go out somewhere. They had to go to a gay bar, perhaps a sex on premises venue, or even a beat, or, you know, on the train, wherever they happened to be. But now, of course, with online and apps, everything has changed. So what does the survey say about where men are meeting their partners?
Yeah, so that's been a very striking change in the last 5 years. In particular, the rise of mobile phone apps like Grindr and Scruff has been really quite dramatic. So in the last 10 years, I would say that probably the most common way that men met was online, through web, through desktop apps or their laptops. So, you know, 10 years ago, it would have been gaydar. I think that's probably died a bit of a death since then. And when the internet came in, we saw that going to bars and other venues and beats and so on to meet each other, that kind of came off the boil. That became less popular, and the internet was the main thing. What we've seen in the last few years, as first Grindr and then other Scruff and then other apps have become really popular, they have become the most common way that men meet sex partners now. So obviously you do end up having to meet face-to-face in order to have sex, but men in Melbourne, nearly half of them now say that they have met a sex partner, through apps like Grindr or Scruff. And the takeoff of those has been really quite rapid. As the mobile apps have become more popular, it's had a knock-on effect. So particularly venues and actually the internet have become less popular ways to meet partners. So people have really switched to their phones as a way to look for other men.
And so based on all of that information that you've just given us then, what do you see or what have been the biggest changes in behaviours over the past few years for the Melbourne sample specifically?
Well, so what we're sort of seeing is we're seeing gradually increasing levels of HIV testing and treatment, which is positive. You know, we know those are useful in maintaining guys' health. But we also see a gradual rise in condomless sex, which of course means that there are more men who are potentially susceptible to HIV. So that's a bit of, you know, there's sort of good and bad there. And then the other main thing is this rise in use of mobile phone apps to meet partners and the decline in the use of other ways to meet partners, such as venues. So that presents a range of challenges for particularly for health promotion in engaging gay men, because they're increasingly mobile, not all in the same place. You know, they can look for sex wherever they are. And increasingly, it's not the majority of men, but increasingly there's a minority of men who are willing to not always use condoms every time they have sex. And so educating them about the best ways to stay safe, because we see no evidence the men aren't... We see no evidence that men aren't concerned about HIV, but and they want to avoid HIV. But obviously, in the current context of effective treatments and so on, they also realise that it's not as much of a threat as it used to be. So you see men more willing to try and negotiate with each other and do different things. And, you know, so engaging with them in the current prevention environment is really interesting, but also quite challenging.
And so are there any major differences between Melbourne and the other cities, or is it sort of generically Eastern Seaboard is kind of the same and maybe different cities might have sort of fluctuations here and there?
And that's fair. You know, you see some individual fluctuations, like things like drug use in the Eastern Seaboard cities. It's, you know, we ask about a range of drugs that men use and they go up and down and it varies, and the absolute levels of, you know, safe sex testing and so on all vary a bit. The long-term trends are very similar in the big cities. You know, levels of testing and treatment are generally going up. Levels of condomless sex are generally going up over time as well, so there are similar challenges across the country. Melbourne specifically has quite high levels of testing and treatment and reasonably good levels of condom use, for example, with casual partners, and we think that's because there's a really strong history of HIV prevention and education, and there are a lot of organisations working with gay men, and there's a good availability of services. So men in Melbourne, you know, they have a lot of options, and you see that reflected in the data. Like, if you go to some of the smaller cities where there are fewer places to go, where the organisations are less well-funded, you get more men who don't seem to, you know, you sometimes see more evidence that the safe sex culture isn't as well embedded, and people don't present to services to have sexual health checkups as often.
And just before we jump across to the count study, which I'm really interested to sort of get into, you mentioned drug use just quickly. So is there a nice epidemic?
No, there isn't an ice epidemic.
Sorry, that was just me being cheeky, Martin.
I know. Yeah, I'm a bit scarred by dealing with general media over talking about crystal use among gay men in Melbourne. I mean, one of the things we do, one of the challenges we have is that we ask about things that can be quite controversial to people. So, you know, in Melbourne, there's a big debate going on about ice use in general. What we've seen recently, and I just went back and looked at this, in the last few years, we've seen some very small increases over the last 5 years in the use of a few sex-related drugs among gay men. Amyl, poppers, a small increase in crystal and a small increase in cocaine. However, if you go back over a longer period of time, you see, you know, peaks and troughs in these things. Things go up, they go down. You know, the problem we had this year is that we observed a large jump in crystal use among HIV-positive men in the Melbourne survey, and that was picked up on by the gay press and then by some of the Fairfax media as well. And we can't really explain why we found it, but we did find it, and then, of course, we got asked a lot of questions going, is crystal use running out of control in Melbourne? And my based on my experience, I would say no, but obviously you do need to pay attention to that, and, you know, if you see use go up, the number of people who are having some problems with their use will also go up as well. So you need to, services need to pay attention to that. And obviously we'll be paying a lot of attention next year to see whether that trend continues or whether it drops back down again.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, Jason Gibbs here, Joy 94.9 production manager. Want to learn more about radio or audio editing? We're often looking for people to join our team as program production audio producers, responsible for producing podcasts just like this one. Get involved, meet new people and learn new skills. Join one of the biggest community radio contributors of podcasts by volunteering for Joy's program production team. All skill levels welcome, no prior knowledge of audio production is required, and best of all, training is free for all Joy members. Keep an eye on the volunteer vacancies page at joy.org.au, and if we're looking for people to join our team, it'll tell you how to get involved right there. The Joy 94.9 program production team, powering Joy podcasts. Any show, any time. Online at joy.org.au.
Well, 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 on Joy 94.9.
Indeed, this is Well, 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 and we're chatting with Associate Professor Martin Holt. But we have had another message in, and funnily enough, we were talking about podcasts then. This is from Gary, our podcaster here on Well, 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 who podcasts the show. He's saying, yes, having just finished at Facilitating Young and Gay at VAC, I'm so glad to hear Martin going through this data from the survey. Lots of young men really respond well to these results and figures, and it's an important tool for them to construct their personal risk assessment frameworks. Cheers, guys. That's from Gary, our podcaster.
So, Martin, the other study that we've got you in to talk about, which is really interesting, is the COUNT study. So, can you tell the listener what the study is about?
Yeah, of course. So this was something we did last year mainly. We asked men who took part in the community periodic surveys, which we've been discussing, to do an additional study. And this involved them providing us a sample to be tested for HIV and for permission to link their test results with their questionnaire answers. And the aim of the study was to measure HIV prevalence among gay and bisexual men and then compare the results of the biological testing with what men believe their HIV status to be. And in particular, we wanted to know how many men might have HIV but not be aware of it.
So how was the testing done, Martin?
Yeah, so this was kind of, it was quite amazing actually. We used these collection devices, these small absorbent pads, to collect an oral fluid sample, and you put the pad between your cheek and gums for 2 minutes. It tastes a bit disgusting. It tastes of salt. It's a bit weird. Mm. And then you store the sample in a little storage device, and then we send all the samples off to the lab, the National Reference Laboratory in Melbourne, where they amazingly can perform HIV antibody testing on those samples.
And so I understand that people were able to choose whether they wanted to know their results or not. Why do you think people would not want to know but want to participate in the study?
Yeah,
I mean, it's basically a free HIV test.
It is a free HIV test, but of course, you know, HIV testing for some people can be a bit of a challenge and is something they're fearful of. It was very important for us that we did not force people to get tested when they weren't ready. They needed to know they were getting a test and be prepared to get their result. So we think so men who may have been fearful of testing at that time, well, offering them a test in a bar or a venue or an event wasn't going to reduce that fear. So it was very important for us and for the recruitment team that we did not pressure anybody to take part if they didn't want to. However, I have to say that the vast majority of guys who we approached, 3 out of 4, chose to get get their test results. And the majority of people who didn't were actually HIV positive men who wanted to support the study, give us a sample. And then, of course, there isn't really much value in them getting another HIV test. In fact, I had one WAG, an HIV positive man, saying, is it going to change my HIV status by giving you a test a sample in the field? And I'm like, no. And he said, all right, fine, I'll just do the questionnaire then, thank you. And then we were actually, because we were testing thousands of guys, we obviously needed a way to give them their results. And we gave most people their results by text message, which some people can find a little bit odd. But what we did is anybody who it looked like where we weren't sure what their test result was, or they might have a new case of HIV, we asked all of them to call us on a staffed phone number so they could speak to a trained counsellor and arrange confirmatory testing. So that's sort of how we managed the process.
And so, I mean, obviously the basis of the study is sort of seeing what the prevalence of undiagnosed infections are within the community. But what's so important about understanding that figure?
Yeah. So, well, there's two main things. So on an individual level, for the guys involved, you don't want to have undiagnosed HIV, because the longer you're infected without knowing it, the more harm the virus can do to your body. So because you don't have the option of going on treatment or managing your health in other ways. And so understanding how many people are out there with undiagnosed HIV, there's a health issue there for those people.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that's important is that guys who are unaware of their infection may unwittingly spread the virus, because they may think they're having safe sex because they're both the same, they may be having sex without condoms and they think there's no risk of transmission, but in actual fact, they might be putting their partner at risk. And previous analysis that the team I'm involved with has done suggests that up to a third of new infections in Australia may originate from guys with undiagnosed HIV. So obviously, if we could find those people and reduce the number of undiagnosed cases through testing, we could slow the HIV infection rate in Australia.
Now, Martin, obviously you're still in the process of calculating and then analysing the data, but what can you tell us about what you've found so far?
Sure.
In relation to Melbourne and perhaps elsewhere as well?
Yeah, of course. So, yes, we're in the process of crunching the numbers at the moment and preparing various analyses to present, but we have been discussing the results with people who are interested, and I'm happy to sort of do that here, that's fine. What we found nationally is a relatively low level of undiagnosed infection, which is actually a bit of a relief. So what we found nationally out of the thousands of men that we tested is that 9% of the HIV-positive men, so just the HIV-positive people who tested positive, 9% of them were undiagnosed. And what that equates to is about 1 in 100 of all the gay and bisexual men who took part.
Mm.
So about 1 in 100 of all gay and bisexual men were undiagnosed, or 9% of the positive men. Now that, and the level of undiagnosed infection was relatively similar in Melbourne, a tiny bit lower. And when we looked at the men with undiagnosed HIV, so was there anything that set them apart from other guys? They were more likely, not exclusively, but they were more likely to report high-risk practices, as you might expect, such as condomless sex with casual partners,
yeah,
injecting drug use, and the use of party drugs for sex, particularly Crystal and GHB. So they didn't all report that, but there seemed to be a high-risk profile among the undiagnosed men, which kind of makes sense.
Yeah, Martin, because we actually got a message that just came in now, and it said, I got the free HIV test and elected not to get the results, and this wasn't because I didn't want to know, but because I prefer to get results from my doctor in a face-to-face relationship. So I guess that's another element to why someone might elect not to get the results.
Yeah, yeah. And that's absolutely true as well, because, I mean, like, getting tested in a study is no substitute for ongoing relationship, with your service provider. I mean, like, we were not going to be there permanently, and people taking part knew that. They knew that we weren't going to be coming back regularly to offer testing, and also it was just HIV testing. It wasn't a full sexual health screening, and we couldn't provide individual advice to people as well about their ongoing practices. So, yeah, that's an absolutely fair point.
Fantastic. Well, Martin, thank you so much for coming on and chatting about the research that you've been involved with. Where can people find this research, or where can they go, or when can we expect sort of the full crunching of the numbers to be released?
Yeah, sure. So the periodic surveys, we put the data out for people so they can refer to it on the Centre for Social Research and Health website, and I know VAC, you know, circulates the Melbourne results as well. We also have a website for the Gay Community Periodic Surveys, which is gcpsonline.net, where we also post links to the publications. Now, for Count, it's a one-off study, and at the moment we're just trying to get our results through the peer review publication process. But we're hoping later in the year we'll present the findings at the Australasian HIV conference, which is going to be held in Brisbane in September. And we also hope to do some sessions in Melbourne and Sydney as well to discuss the results with community and other stakeholders as well. And when that's done, then I'm sure VAC and other organisations will publicise the findings so they're more accessible to other people.
Fantastic. Well, Martin, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been an absolute delight. And we'll have to get you back on once numbers have been crunched.
No worries. I'd be very happy to return. You have a good afternoon.
You too.
Cheers, Martin.
This
bye-bye.
Well, cheers. On Joy 94.9.
This is Well on Joy 94.9. And goodness gracious me, look at the time. It's time to say farewell. But you know what, Adam?
What's that?
Two new members of Joy. We have Cheryl and Anne. Both have joined up and become members in the last few seconds of the show.
Yay.
So,
we love them.
Welcome, Cheryl. Welcome, Anne, to the Joy family. We need to thank Carlos, Gary and Marcus for sending in messages today, to thank Martin for that really interesting chat which we had about the periodic survey and the Count study. And as we go out, we need to give a shout out to Kel, who's one of our colleagues, but who's in the running to become Mr. Laird Leatherman at the Laird Hotel during a week of leather and fetish. This has been our 501st show of Well. We look forward to chatting with you again next week on next week's show. Have a great week, everyone, and cheerio. Bye-bye.
Bye, all.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.